Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Your hamburger comes with a dose of misogyny.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Popular culture is flooded with references to sexy cows, sexy pigs, sexy chickens, sexy fishes.
How did she
fishes.
Get back in here?
Our whiteness
How did she get
is
back
part
in here?
Of the problem of meat eating.
I thought we locked the studio doors.
She found her way back
she
in.
She got back in.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but then I just found the response. So someone actually got up and gave a response
okay.
to her.
To what yeah. she was saying?
To what she was saying, yeah.
Okay.
So here's the rest of the story.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Your hamburger comes with a dose of misogyny.
What would that even look like? So you've got lettuce, tomato,
I think that's animal
mayo,
style.
Onions. What was
isn't that an
what
in
would the
out?
Misogyny look like?
That's an in and out option, right? You were just there. You were just an in and out.
I love in and out.
Is that how you ordered your? Is that how you ordered your burger?
I have never ordered a burger with a dose of misogyny. It's never occurred to. It's never been on the menu.
Well, animal style is not on the menu, but you have to.
No,
you have to ask for.
Well,
it.
Well, that's if you know. If you know your way
if
around
you know,
that burger.
Yeah. So now you know.
So are you going to post that for the benefit of people who?
Okay, I will. I was having so much fun playing it, I forgot about Twitter.
So, your yes, hamburger comes with a dose of misogyny.
Let me find it, and I'll put that on Twitter in just a sec.
People on Twitter are reacting.
Oh, yeah.
So Patricia Smith says, quote of the day on the Patrick Madrid Show, your hamburger comes with a dose of misogyny. Laughing so hard I'm crying, and looking forward to the chicken I'm having for dinner tonight. Hashtag Team Taco. And Miss Ellie's getting in on the action as well. Sexy cow, sexy pig, sexy fish. As your hamburger comes with a dose of misogyny. I love it when the people on Twitter get into.
So when I post this video and you watch it, there is a young, he must be a student, and he's right behind her.
They're all, most of them are guys.
Most of them are guys.
And they're all looking at her in incredulity. Like, who on earth is this person?
There's a dude that is doing his best not to crack up. But this woman is 100% serious. She is not joking. But so watch. I know, and it's hard to take your eyes off of her because what she's saying is just complete nonsense.
And she's very
but
if serious.
If you can watch the student right behind her and just try to be in his shoes and not bust up laughing.
Mm-hmm.
It's
good
fun.
Luck.
It's fun.
Good,
yeah, good luck.
But now I want to pivot on that one. So that's crazy. Here's some more crazy. This is from NPR. This is crazy. Okay, so this is an article in the Daily Wire, but it's talking about NPR, National Public Radio. Beatles fans of all ages can flock to Disney Plus for the new documentary called Get Back that reassembles footage of John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, and Ringo Starr creating music as the band begins to dissolve. I saw all, 6 hours of it? Loved it. Loved every minute of it. Except for the Yoko Ono parts. I didn't love that part, but I loved the rest of it. NPR, however, used the occasion for guilt trip clickbait. And the headline is, how did we get stuck with the idea that four white guys make a rock band? That's racist, by the way. NPR music critic Ann Powers uncorked a long, unforgiving treatise on how it doesn't matter that the Beatles were progressive and loved black music because they were still somehow part of making rock music white and exclusionary. Rock's defining narrative, she said, still stands alongside others that reflect the historic segregation of Anglo-American social spheres, which is a meaningless phrase to most people. They wouldn't understand what... I mean, just use regular words. You don't have to talk down to people. That's what condescension is, Cyrus. It's when you talk down to people. Did you know that?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Don't be condescending. That's when you talk down to people.
Is that also called mansplaining now? Is that, well, is that along the same thing?
Assuming that your hamburger came with a dose of misogyny, I guess so.
That's right.
The Beatles and the Rolling Stones wouldn't play segregated venues, and they paid tribute to black musicians who inspired them. But Powers, the NPR music critic, wrote, as they became rock's norm, they allowed white fans to enjoy what the late great music writer Greg Tate identified as a pasteurized form of black culture. Tate called it everything but the burden. They allowed white, this is her speaking, they allowed white fans to eat a Velveeta cheese version of black music. So much of this racialized criticism thrives on a vivid imagination of allowance and thievery. Now, this is the article sort of weaving in here and there her comments. Powers writes that black musician Questlove's documentary on the 1969 Harlem Cultural Festival, compared with the new Beatles documentary, felt like a newly uncovered landmark in the recent recentered cultural world emerging in step with the movement for Black Lives Matter. The other, wonderfully intimate and revealing as it is, reasserts familiar hierarchies. She's referring there to the Beatles. NPR is reasserting its familiar ideology. This is where many readers would check out after a few hectoring paragraphs. Can't you just love the Beatles without feeling like you're reinforcing an quote-unquote informally segregated sphere? Boy, I hate informally segregated spheres, Cyrus. I don't know about you. This is not how people listen to music any more than people only limit themselves to one ethnicity of food. The alleged racism here is about definitions. What is rock? What is pop? What is rhythm and blues? This artificially sets up the genre of rock to be a quote-unquote white male preserve. Does she know about Jimi Hendrix? Has she ever heard about him? But the familiar hierarchy of white people also loved the Motown sound and embraced its virtuoso black performers and innovators such as Stevie Wonder. You can love rock, jazz, country, and classical. You can have them all on your playlist. But Powers wants to pretend we're still living in 1965. And it just goes on from there. It's just a good example of somebody who thinks long and hard before coming up with the wrong answer. And although I don't know any of her other writings, I would imagine that she probably gets it wrong on a lot of other things too. But that's what I'm talking about, Cyrus, is just she insists that the Beatles as artists were racist, inherently racist, because they were white. And my point is, That's racist to say that, to single people out just because of their race and under the so-called guise of anti-racism to perpetrate racism against a different group of people, all the while masquerading as an anti-racist. What she's saying and writing there, I mean, it doesn't matter what you think about the Beatles. You can like them, you can dislike them. And I know you like them, like I do. But irrespective of what people think about the Beatles and their music, the fact is, this take on their music is racist. And it's, as I say, masquerading under the guise of anti-racism.
So there's that. The
Velveeta of
Wow. What a nonsense. It's nonsense.
Speaking of nonsense, I think we have some more audio. Now this is okay, so this is from TikTok, or I'm sorry, Libs of TikTok. If you're on Twitter and if you want to kind of keep an eye on what's happening on TikTok by way of insane leftist. Yeah,
you
want to
see what
craziness?
Your kids are watching.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's 60 seconds of a woman who is, I guess she identifies as a furry, and I guess a furry is somebody who identifies as an animal, whatever that means. And there's probably a dose of misogyny in there somewhere. So she is on TikTok explaining, how would you describe this? She's explaining her preferred pronouns? Would that be the essence of this?
That's right. Okay. Patrick, I have perfectly sane and intelligent members in my family that have added she pronouns to like their resumes and to their public documents that they send out.
So this is
real.
Oh, I know. And you're right about that. It's spreading. The stupid is spreading. I'm going to make a confession here. If I see people in their profiles on social media, for maybe Twitter, for example, who with a straight face, not joking, not like ironically doing this, and they put their pronouns, they volunteer their pronouns, I will either block them or I'll mute them, because I don't want their insanity polluting my my timeline with ridiculous comments. So I have an aversion, I have an allergy to this kind of thing. And I think people who want to see this nonsense go away should have a similar kind of allergic reaction to it and don't tolerate it. But anyway, so here's what your kids are seeing on TikTok.
I mute this and I don't look at it, but here, everybody, listen to this.
Well, yeah, I want to make my point. Yeah. Although this is TikTok, so I didn't see her. I didn't see her social media profile. This is just her with a little blip talking about her preferred pronouns. And you tell me if any of this makes sense to you.
You actually have a preference. That's why I will usually say it's, or I don't care, because it is my favorite. I love it when people call me it. But beyond that, I like he next. He takes the second spot, but not because I identify as a boy, but just because I love it when people perceive me that way, especially when it's like other men type people perceiving me as a man. Like, I just want to be a bro with the bros, but like also I want to be perceived as a girl by cuties. It's, I don't know. But yeah, so it was my favorite, then he, but like I'm not a boy, I'm a girl. They is my least favorite.
It's all insanity on stilts, but the thing that really stuck out to me, and this is I'm being completely not humorous here. The fact that this woman wants to be called it, that's her favorite pronoun, she said. That tells a tale, I think, personally, that, and I don't know how to diagnose that. I don't have the tools in terms of like what the clinical people would say about that, but it sure tells me that she has a real crisis of her own self-awareness, that she prefers it when people refer to her as an object. It.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah. And I imagine that a therapist could have just endless hours of work trying to unravel where that comes from and what would drive somebody to prefer being called it as opposed, and, you know, it reminds me of how so much of what's going on with this ideology and things associated with it, it's a dehumanizing process where people lose their own sense of who they are, let alone any idea, any notion, which I think is long forgotten for many people now, who they are in light of God, in light of God's love for them, because for many of them, most of them, perhaps God doesn't even exist. And they're losing sight of who they are. And they're losing, as this poor woman is expressing, she has lost sight, it seems, of her own humanity. And how do you reach people like that? That's the question I've thought of a lot lately, Cyrus, and I'm not sure if I have the right set of answers. I have a few hunches, but when people can no longer even recognize themselves as male or female, they can't, or they're unwilling to recognize themselves as male or female, and they're unwilling in the case of someone like this poor person who can't recognize herself even as a human being made in God's image and likeness with inherent dignity. How do you reach people like that? I mean, there should be an order of religious priests and sisters that would be established for the purpose of going as missionaries into TikTok land. You know, and I say that only half tongue in cheek. It's a wilderness of superstition and false notions and outright lies. It's an absolute wilderness. And how many hundreds of millions of people are getting lost in the wilderness of TikTok and being shaped and formed by that? I really think we need a cadre of well-formed missionaries to go into that digital mission field.
Yeah.
And evangelize these people.
Yeah, a long time ago, you had brought up the comparison of body dysmorphia and how we wouldn't, not only would we not celebrate the person's body dysmorphia, we would try to help them. But with...
Not everybody knows what that means. So that body dysmorphia is where you feel you identify as an amputee, even though your limbs are completely healthy and normal. And so you convince some doctor somewhere to amputate one or more of your limbs, because that's how you identify, and it irks you that you have healthy, well-formed arms and legs.
Right.
So you have them amputated.
That's right. Or what's it called when like you look in the mirror and say you're really skinny, but you look in the mirror and you see a fat person. And so you starve yourself. What's that called?
Mm-hmm. Anorexia.
Anorexia. Okay, thanks.
Nervous disorder.
And so we don't celebrate them and say, you know, yeah, you identify as a fat person. You are a fat person, and I'm going to help. I'm going to eat this hamburger in front of you.
With a dose of misogyny?
Thank you. I was waiting for it. But I mean, seriously, is this not a mental disorder?
It is. It absolutely is. But see, that's the unaskable question on social media.
How dare I?
You couldn't say that. Well, everybody should recognize this. I pray that people do. That's part of the way to resist it. That's part of the way to stand up against it, because it's a steamroller right now. And TikTok is a big part of that. I used to not even care about TikTok like a year ago when I first started hearing about it. Now it seems to me to be like the engine of destruction in so many ways. The more I find out about it, this being an example. And these people aren't joking. This is not like, hey, let's make a funny prank video. Well, I'll say something really ridiculous and everybody will laugh at it. They really mean this stuff. And the kids who are watching this are swayed by it. I don't know why. I can't imagine being 13 years old and being swayed by this if TikTok had existed when I was a kid. It's just so patently ridiculous. But yet, amazingly, a lot of people do fall for it. So we need to evangelize in that space. That's a really popular term nowadays. Well, I'm in the religious space, or I'm in the advertising space. So we need to get into the TikTok space, don't you think? And evangelize these people? How would we do that exactly? I'm not sure. I said I had a few hunches. Well, one hunch should be, if TikTok would permit it, and it probably wouldn't, to be producing TikTok videos that are every bit as catchy and, you know, have all the hooks in them that these kind of videos do, but with the message of Jesus, with the message of truth, with the message of the binary, that there really are only men and women. Now, I don't know how long that would be tolerated on TikTok. Maybe they would clamp down very quickly on something like that. I don't know. But boy, if ever there were a mission field, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, those are definitely mission fields, if you ask me. Instagram? Absolutely. Any words of wisdom, Cyrus, before I press on?
I think you covered it perfectly. Thank you.
That super wokeness, super cut of wokeness is a keeper. Your yes, hamburger.
It is. Oh, yeah. I need another one of those. Where did I put it?
Just for kicks, sometime when you go into a hamburger stand sometime, just ask for... You have a cheeseburger with everything and a dose of misogyny, and just see
your
if
hamburger
reaction.
Comes with a dose of misogyny.
You know what I want to do, Cyrus? I would love to get her together in person with those two women who are pulling down with their arms energy from the sky, and the trees are mad at them. Remember those ladies?
She might be one of those ladies.
She might. I'll bet they could form a trio. And the three, could you imagine the three of them together while the other ones are talking about how the trees are mad at us? Cool beans. We'll talk to the grass as they're pulling down imaginary things from the
sky.
Now
the grass is kind of angry at us, though.
Cool beans. Onward, ho. Let's talk to the trees.
Oh.
I had it backward. I'd love to get those
I don't want
three
that on my
together.
Karmic record.
No, I really don't.
Can you work on that, Cyrus? I'd like to introduce these three women to each other and see what comes of it.
Patrick,
like a super group of insanity.
I'd do anything for you, but I am not going anywhere near these ladies.
All right. Let's collect ourselves. 888-914-9149. Sam in Athens, Georgia, home of REM. Automatic for the people. Welcome aboard, Sam.
Automatic for the people. I'm going to order a sexy pork chop from Weaver D's today.
Please don't. Please don't. With a dose of misogyny?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my.
And by the way, I've tried identifying as Cyrus, but nobody goes for it.
That happens to Cyrus too.
Every day.
Every day. So how may I be of service this morning?
Well, I just wanted to point out that the Beatles did play with a black performer named Billy Preston.
Yeah. Yeah, Get Back. He played the keyboards for Get Back and a number of Don't Let Me Down.
Uh-huh.
He was there on the rooftop concert in London. Yeah, good stuff. So does that exonerate the Beatles?
Well, in my mind, they never were anything that these people have been saying, but what do you think?
Well, I think it's just, you know, it's blatant foolishness. Yeah, it's silly. It's blatant foolishness. And who knows, maybe somebody like that, the woman who wrote that piece for NPR, maybe it's just because, you know, that's her beat, you know, and on her beat, she has to find racism wherever she can. So if she can't find it, she's got to make it up. And to use the Beatles as a ploy for that, maybe that's what she's doing. I don't know. But yeah, one of the things that the article points out, and I remember in an interview special that I saw with Paul McCartney recently, he talked about how when they were in the U.S. and they were going to venues to play, or they had venues scheduled to play, and they found out that they were segregated venues where black people had to sit in a different section, they just said, "We're not going to play there. We're not going to play it. We'll cancel our gig there." And apparently that happened a few times. And in some cases, they actually caused the venue managers or company, whatever, to integrate the audience. So they were way ahead of their time, certainly as artists and performers. And I'm not trying to canonize the Beatles, far from it. I'm just saying that the ridiculous claim that they were white supremacists in their music and et cetera, or the effects of their music somehow supported white supremacy, is just ridiculous, as so much of this nonsense is.
And I really love the Little Richard songs that the Beatles do and the Isley Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah. Kansas City, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of good stuff there. Sam, good to talk to you. Thank you. This is in your honor. REM, Athens, Georgia. And I'll be right back.
Solutions you can believe in.
The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Why are you playing this white supremacist music, Cyrus?
How dare you?
I'm just going off what NPR said. I mean, done a lot of people. I mean, yeah, don't listen to NPR. Listen to Relevant Radio.
Thank you.
24/7. 888-914-9149. I must say I'm amused, in a positive and fun way, I'm amused by the reactions people are giving to this on Twitter. You know who you are. Let's go to Megan now in Kentucky. Good morning, Megan.
Hi, Patrick. I was a therapist in Ohio in the 2000s.
Okay.
I left my field to raise our kids around 2013, 2014. I think I made the decision, and it was God's decision, not mine, in 2013, and I worked my way out in 2014. I just had a comment about the gal that you had recordings, the person who's saying she's an it.
Yeah.
When I was on my way out around 2011, 12, they were just starting to call that gender dysphoria. And a lot of these issues that now it's gotten to the point with the field that you can't treat that like anorexia. You can't treat that like the other issue that you were talking about with the limbs.
Yeah.
You have to go with it or you will get sued.
Right.
And quite frankly, my kids are old enough now that I can start looking at going in back into the profession, and I just don't want to. Because if somebody comes into my office and says, "I think I'm a girl," or "I think I'm a boy," I can't tell them, "You're made in God's image. He loves you. He made you the way that he intended. Let's work with this. Let's find what's actually hurting you instead of you changing your physical presence. And, that will get you sued now.
Yeah, you're right about that. And I only know about that anecdotally, Megan. I've never worked in that field, but I've heard so many people like you say that that's what's going on. Teachers, for example, counselors in high schools, in the public school system, they know that their job will be gone in a heartbeat if they were to cross some of those lines. And so they feel that their hands are tied and they're not able to say the truth to these people because they'll lose their jobs and their livelihoods. What a terrible predicament to be in. And to be in a position like you were, where you could help these people, but you're constrained from helping them because of these ridiculous new sensibilities now. It's just, it's maddening and it's frightening, quite frankly, because it doesn't show any signs of abating. This shows all the signs of metastasizing even further.
What's even worse with this is I am trying to help in my diocese because there's such a need for mental health help, especially in the state that we are now. Mm-hmm. I see it. It breaks my heart. I know I can help, but I'm not going to go out there and go through a lawsuit like that.
Yeah.
And I've tried to talk to our priest, some of our priests here, and they say they're hesitant to even send people who desperately need counseling. They're hesitant to even send them because they know the stuff that's out there in counseling. The new age is huge in counseling now. And it's like the whole field has been taken over. Mm-hmm. If people can find a good Catholic therapist, go and hang on to them because they need your support, but they also, you know, if you find somebody good, hang on to them because there's so much just other stuff that's out there and that's not good.
Now, you mentioned in your past career, I want to make sure I understand, were you a physician, were you an MD, or what area of the field of medicine were you working in?
I was a mental health counselor with a master's level in Ohio. And actually, through that whole time, as my commute went into the city that I worked, I listened to you on a different program. So I've been listening to you since 2008.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
You've helped me a lot.
Oh, that's good to know. Thank you. Well, what are your plans? I mean, or do you have any? So it sounds like you're not intending to go back into that field. Is there a way that you can use your gifts and your training without being vulnerable to that kind of backlash?
Well, there's the way that I understand the ethics in my state. I can't go out as a secular therapist. I have to work with a church. We have a difficult situation we just have a difficult situation with our diocese. I don't really want to say anything more than that, other than, you know, it's just a difficult situation with some of the people in charge. So I just don't know if there's a place for me, whether it's in ministry or whether it's in a professional sense. Mm-hmm. I've been praying on it. I feel pulled. I'm just kind of in a holding pattern saying, Lord, I need you to show me exactly what you want me to do. And I will take that step. I will go do it. But I'm just right now kind of in a holding pattern waiting on that guidance.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, that's a wise thing to do. Wait on the Lord. And in due time, you'll get your answer. No doubt about that. But what a shame in the meantime that you have to be sidelined when you could be helping people. But I understand, and I think you're making a wise move doing that.
Well, I don't want to take a step too fast, because I've done that in the past, and it whenever I take a step too fast, it's my plan, not his, and it falls apart. So, but if pray for me, because he needs to make it so obvious for me so I know that it's not me and I know it's him.
You got it. I will.
All of us therapists out there, we are really getting hammered by this cancel culture, and it's just really sad. And it's got a lot of people scared. I'm not the only one out there sitting on the sidelines.
Well, have courage. What did Jesus say? He said, in the world you will have tribulation, but be of good courage or of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. So obviously it doesn't mean that we won't go through difficult times. But in the end, of course, if you're with Jesus, it's going to be okay. So take some comfort in that and press on, chin up, you know, keep going. And there's plenty more work yet to do. And as the Lord reveals it to you, sounds like you're ready, willing, and able to do it.
Yes. Hope so.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening to the program, Megan. I hope that it's continuing to give you that kind of encouragement and all whatever other good things you're getting from it. I hope that that's the case. And please tell your friends in your area, tell them about Relevant Radio. We'd sure appreciate that.
I'm always talking about Patrick Madrid. Thank you.
Hopefully in a nice way. I'm sure you are.
Yes.
I'm sure you are.
Yes.
You might say harsh things about Cyrus, but you would always be nice about me, right?
Yeah.
Just
always.
Everyone loves Cyrus. Everybody loves Cyrus. Thanks, Megan. Great to talk to you. Cyrus, no joke, when I was speaking at various parishes throughout the Phoenix area, at every single stop, people came up to me and asked me, is Cyrus here? Will Cyrus be here today? Can I meet Cyrus? I'm serious.
That's really nice. Hey, I just got a nice email for you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, this is from Sharon. It says, oh, this is for me.
I should have read. Oh, well, then don't read it.
Never mind. I'll say this for myself. This is really
read
cool.
It. Go ahead.
No, it's all right. I should make you read this.
All right. Send it to me.
All right. I will.
Or pass me that paper and I will read it. Let's go to Grace in Irvine, California. Good morning, Grace. I remember when my family moved to Mission Viejo, they bought the plot of land that they built their house on, my mom and dad, in, I think it was late 1969 or early 1970. That's when we moved in. Irvine was one gigantic orange grove. As far as you could see in every direction, it was just orange groves. And as you know, it doesn't look like that anymore, does it?
Nope. It's pretty much a grove of cars and condos.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, welcome.
Thank you. Patrick, I had a comment to consider about the woman who considers herself an object and whose preferred pronoun was it.
Yeah.
There are probably many reasons, and you know, in my theological studies, one of those is just, a lack of knowledge of God in general and a lack of human anthropology, understanding who we are, you know, in regards to, you know, God and the Trinity. However, in my time in healing ministries, what I've discovered is just the fact that there is so much abuse in the world now, stemming in my opinion, it started with Humana Vitae, the breakdown of marriages, then the breakdown of the family, and we're several generations down from that, children having children of broken children. And what I've noticed commonly is if a person has been abused, then if they are a woman, they might not think of themselves as that because it makes them vulnerable or it triggers a memory of being mistreated. Mm-hmm. Or if you were neglected in some way, you've been treated like an object and not acknowledged in your human dignity and your worth, why would you think anything else? So one of the things that I've been trying to do is work the healing from that angle. And once these people that I've worked with have started to heal, it just kind of resolves itself because they find worth, because only God can heal, and especially through the sacraments. But those false ideologies and false beliefs about themselves and who they are starts to fall away naturally.
Mm-hmm. So you have to deprogram people. And what's the process like to deprogram somebody from that false self-identity, thinking that you're an it instead of a she or a he? How do you do that?
you know, it comes many ways. The healing process model that I've kind of working with is you know, the acronym I use is SPICE. All the parts of self have to be addressed, and then people have to experience the love of God from someone. So it's addressed through spiritually, through the, you know, spiritual life and spiritual healing, through the church, physically, because as a Kessel van der Kolk in his book, The Body Keeps the Score, he addresses the fact that a lot of trauma and memory is stored biochemically in other ways in the body. Mm-hmm. Intellectually, you have to learn to, you know, understand the truth in God. C is for community or social. You have to heal and, you know, learn to trust in relationship. And most of these people have never learned any life skills or any relationship skills. So all that has to be learned, and they kind of have to be parented. And then E is for emotion, and the emotional side, you have to learn how to, what your emotions are, how to identify what's going on in your interior life. A lot of that and the life skills are taught by therapists, life coaches, spiritual mothers and fathers. So that's...
Before I have to go, Grace, this is very helpful information, and I thank you for walking through that. What level of vulnerability would you say you're in the great state of California from the powers that be who might want to stomp on you if you were trying to help somebody get out of that mindset? Are you in any real danger to have your license revoked or to be fined or sued or something like that?
Well, while I have a degree in a social science and psychology, and working on one as master's in theology, and have a professional graduate level in kinesiology on the physical side.
Well, I'm afraid we ran out of time on that one, Grace. The break is here. But thank you for sharing what you did. I got to run, but thank you. I really appreciate it. I really do. I'm glad to know there are people like you out there who are helping as best you can. I'll be right back.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I got the letter, Cyrus. Your fan mail.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
You want me to read it, don't you?
I don't. Yes, I do.
Of course you do. I don't blame you. It's a nice fan letter. This is from Sharon. She says, "Hi, Cyrus. I love the Patrick Madrid Show. Just wanted to let you know you, in all caps, are a big reason for that. You obviously have a big heart and a great love for God. Your wit and humor literally make me laugh out loud wherever I am, which can be awkward when I'm walking through the grocery with my earbuds in. Thank you for being the Lucy to Patrick's Desi."
I'm the Lucy.
You're more like the Ethel to my Lucy.
Thanks. What was the dude's name, the friend?
If you wanted to go male, then I would be, I guess I would be Desi and you'd be Fred Mertz.
Okay, can I be Fred?
You could be Fred.
Please.
You could be Fred or Ethel. Take your pick.
Fred.
Fred Mertz. Thanks for being the Lucy to Patrick's Desi. You make a great team. Thanks for all you do. And Patrick, thanks for all you and Patrick do. Sincerely, Sharon. That is really thoughtful. Yeah. I've never thought of you as a Lucy to my Desi.
I haven't either.
I prefer to think of you as a Fred to my Desi.
Or a Fred to your Barney.
Barney wasn't in I Love Lucy.
That was the Flintstones.
Oh, that Fred.
That Fred, Barney. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I could see that. But you're the taller one, so it would sort of be a reversal of roles.
That's true. More muscular, more handsome. You got the brains, though.
I don't know. Let's go to Marianne in Dallas. Good morning, Marianne.
Hey, Patrick. I like that. Actually, I like the Ethel. He's the Ethel to your Lucy, but, you know, just keeping with proper pronouns and all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely Fred to your Desi.
I would agree.
That's
yeah,
more
I would
appropriate.
Agree to my Desi.
Way more appropriate.
Babaloo.
Okay.
Babaloo. Yeah. Okay. I am headed into my Bible study right now, but the last time during our last meeting, the topic of naming guardian angels came up. And I said, you know, I don't think you're supposed to do that, because I could have sworn on your show, I heard you say that that was a no-no, but I forgot the reason why. And I was wondering if you could expand on
that. Sure. Yeah. Great question. Excuse me. Yeah. Great question. The reasons are basically, number one, that in the created order, angels are above human beings. They're closer to God in the order of creation than we are. And for one thing, when you name somebody, like when a parent names a child or Adam named the animals, it shows, and it's symbolic of your authority over that person. And so in a symbolic sense, if a human being were to, you know, imagine that he could name an angel, and keep in mind, angels already have names given to them by God. We can't name them. It would be a distortion of the reality that they are above us, not below us. So we don't have the authority to name the angels. The second thing would be that angels are not our mascots. They're not our, you know, they're not like our pets or our buddies or a mascot that we get to name because, you know, as if your guardian angel, and I don't mean this about you personally, but as if your guardian angel were the Robin to your Batman, like a sidekick. They're not that. They're vast conflagrations of love for God and intelligence, and they're given the mission to protect us. And quite frankly, I think the relationship between the angels and human beings is not unlike the way human beings take care of animals. You know, there are things that animals need for us to do that they can't do for themselves. And in a certain sort of way, analogously, it's kind of like that, where the angels are taking care of us the way we take care of animals. So it's just inappropriate for us to presume that we could name a guardian angel. For those, I think, are the two primary reasons. And then lastly, of course, as I mentioned, is because God is the one who names the angels. And so if you call, you know, not you personally per se, but if you, you know, have a nickname for your angel, I mean, he's not going to answer to it. It's not as though he will suddenly identify as the name that somebody on earth gives. So there are a variety of reasons. I think those are the most compelling, if you ask me.
Okay. Oh, this is excellent. Excellent, excellent. Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, because I'm about to walk in there right now, so.
Okay, great. Perfect. Well, if you wouldn't mind, if you'd do me a favor and just tell everybody in that sure. Bible study about Relevant Radio, and maybe we can get them to start listening too.
I have, believe me.
Thank you.
I have, yes. I've mentioned your name and several of the other hosts on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for that.
Constantly.
I appreciate that
very
much.
Definitely. Yep.
Awesome. Well, it's good to talk to you, Marianne, and thanks for the question. I never tire of talking about angels. Let's go to E. Frank now in New York. Hello, E. Frank.
Yes. Hi. Good morning, Patrick.
Yes.
You know, I have a question about Lent. I don't understand too well the origins of Lent itself, because historically it comes from medieval times, I believe, and I don't understand what the reason is that we should impose or place an Ash Wednesday, an ash, indicating that we have given something up and sacrificed ourselves during a 48-day period. And I'm a little bit confused about the true meaning and also the origins of Lent. Could you, Patrick, explain that a little bit?
Sure, I'll do my best, E. Frank. The origins of Lent, I mean, there are many that you can see in Scripture. I think the most striking of all would be as the Lord was about to begin his public ministry, he imposed a 40-day Lent on himself and went out into the desert and he fasted. I don't know what that would have been like to go without any food at all for 40 days. Presumably he drank water, but he who didn't need to do that, he did that in his humanity, in particular as a way to condition himself for the rigors of his public ministry. And so the church recognizes in what Jesus did a kind of example for us, that as we're preparing for resurrection, as we're preparing for Jesus's resurrection on Easter Sunday, that it's good to emulate what Jesus did and to deprive ourselves of things as so as a way to intensify our wills and to discipline ourselves and to gain further mastery over our lower appetites. Those are all very good things, and it's in keeping with what Jesus did. So part of the origin of Lent is seeking to emulate what the Lord did. And you'll see this with others. So you see, for example, St. Paul, when he had his conversion on the road to Damascus, he tells us that shortly after that, he went into the deserts of Arabia, and he spent 3 years there. And he doesn't give us a lot of detail, but the way he says it suggests that he had a kind of a three-year Lenten fast where he did penance, and he denied himself. He lived in a very remote area, presumably. So there's another example where during Lent, the church has recognized, not only in the Lord, but also in some of these great saints like Saint Paul and others, the need for this bodily purification and this mastery over our natural appetites. Now, you can see Lent, it's not called Lent, as far as I'm aware anyway, in the first several centuries of the church, but certainly by the 300s, you definitely see the custom of doing this in terms of fasting and in special prayers in preparation for the resurrection of Jesus. Keep in mind that in those first few centuries of the church, they did not celebrate Christmas. It was not a celebration on the church's calendar. It eventually became a major celebration, but originally the major celebration was Easter and looking forward to the resurrection of Jesus. So that's why if you go back and look at some of the writings of the church fathers and other things that were written down about what the church was doing, and let's say by the 300s, and later, you'll see that they practiced Lent, and eventually it just became a universal practice. So it may have been regional at first, but it eventually became everywhere. So from an historical standpoint, I think that's where we begin to see this organic development and the recognition on the part of Christians that we need to do something special in preparation for the resurrection of the Lord. Hopefully that gives you a little more to chew on. Okay, I'm not sure if we're having a problem with E. Frank's phone. Let's go to Brandon in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, my question is about saints and relics and, you know, with the Catholic Church and teaching about respecting the dead and all the parts that go along with that. Why the Catholic Church, you know, has different parts of the bodies of saints in different churches and doesn't let them, you know, rest together.
Right. So let me paraphrase the question and tell me if I have it right. Why is it that the church says, for example, you can't have grandma's ashes in an urn on the grand piano in your living room, but yet the church will gladly, cheerfully even, will divide and disseminate parts of the body of the saints in reliquaries? Is that the question you're asking?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the bottom line reason ultimately is because you're not a saint, and nor am I. Now, we're saints in a biblical sense. All of God's people are referred to frequently in the Bible as saints, so we are in that sense. But in terms of a canonized saint, you're not a canonized saint, nor am I. Maybe you'll get there before I do, but the thing is that the reason that the church not only permits, but also encourages the use of relics of the saints, especially like in an altar when a church is consecrated. Typically, there will be a relic of a saint that is embedded in the altar stone as part of the consecration of that altar. Some parishes like mine, where I go to Mass every Sunday, they have a reliquary beneath the altar, and that is redolent of Revelation chapter 6, where it talks about the souls of the martyrs who were resting under the altar in heaven. And so we can do that. Now, the reason for that is that in the case of a canonized saint, the church says that this man or woman, boy or girl, is worthy not only of our veneration, but also worthy of our asking them to intercede for us prayerfully before the throne of God. So for that reason, and because of their special status in the church, it is appropriate that these relics would be made available in churches and, you know, in many other ways as well. And that's the fundamental reason, is because of their status as canonized saints and your and my lack of status as canonized saints. So for us, it's appropriate to be put into the ground, or to be, if you're cremated, to be put into a columbarium. And people can come and visit and pray for you. But the presumption is that we would need prayers after our deaths because we may still be in purgatory. But the saints are in heaven for sure. So that's the distinction. That's the reason.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, perfect timing, because that brought us right up to the music to take our break. Don't forget, Father Rocky's brand new Lenten lessons on the Mass are free to you every single day. All you have to do is go to relevantradio.com/Lent and sign up with your email address, and we'll send those to you, beginning with Ash Wednesday, which is coming up. From Ash Wednesday to Easter morning, your Lent will be illuminated every single day with these brand new premium edition videos by Father Rocky that will help you gain a deeper love and appreciation for Jesus and the Mass. So if you want yours, absolutely free, no salesman will call, no obligation. Just go to relevantradio.com/Lent. I'll be right back.